So you align your tapes in the tape recorders, and we could do the big mix down. So Michel Lontaine was working here, Christian Calonne later on. Let me see who else I can remember. Alain Thibault.
Alain Thibault, yeah.
Decadence was done here. Okay. And some of the prize-winning compositions by Christian Calonne were done here as well. So it was mostly my ideas, the way the electronic studio evolved from using less of the Lecaine machinery because they were not working properly. And Lecaine was getting old and he couldn't fix them.
Okay. So you begin to replace the instrument.
And at that time, the word of the day was the Moog synthesizer, monophonic. We bought it without the sequencer because for many years we used the Lecaine timers as sequencers to control the Moog. And that part was working fine. We bought Aries modules. Eventually, we probably passed by a few other synthesizers, and I started putting pressure on the dean, Paul Peterson. I say, we are really moving towards digital music, and there are a few systems in the market, very modest, but maybe we should get into that. And he always gave me the same answer. He say, no, when we could go to the music store and buy a complete module like the Moog, which is computer driven, then we'll do it. He was the dean. So eventually we bought, years later, the Synclavier 2, very, very expensive. And I used to teach with the Synclavier 2. And it's at that time, probably early 80s, when Christian Calonne was my student, many of the French composers really sign up for the electronic music classes as visiting students or whatever because he wanted to use the facilities. I think that Christian Calonne knew more about the Synclavier than me, and I was a teacher because he had used a similar module in Marseille earlier. But in any case, maybe they learned something from me. We are still very good friends and they respect me. But at some point, we hire Bruce Pennycook because we were, you have to remember this, and again, I'm very proud of it. The new technologies, whatever we call them, media arts, CC Mix or whatever, Circum, Kermit, it all started at the electronic music studio. The only area of the music faculty that had technology for many years, that had microphones, tape recorders, was the electronic music studio. It was nothing else. And I was pushing for the computer era to get into it.
At the very beginning, you mean?
Yes. So we hired Bruce Pennycook because he was a specialist in computing. And from the beginning, he told me, Alcides, the Synclavier had to go. We had to sell it. Because instead of buying the synthesizer, digital or not, with a computer, he said everything can be done from the computer. And eventually we sold the Synclavier. And we started with the Apple II Pluses, and then the Macintosh, whatever versions, okay.
So you begin to install here the MIDI protocol, in fact.
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
We went through all that. Actually, at one point, not only voltage controls and controls for the tape recorders could travel from room to room, MIDI could also travel from room to room. So it was quite powerful, and many things were, many compositions were done here. But with Bruce Pennycook, it was digital now. Desktop computers with dedicated software. That was his approach. And he developed all that is music tech now. He was the one. At one point, he even was dean of, I don't know what they call them. I cannot come up with the terminology. Music and technologies or new media. which is the beginning of whatever is now so powerful here. Bruce Pennycook and me, we worked very well on that. But in any case, for many years, I was a principal teacher of electronic music composition. At some point, I invented a summer class for electronic music for non-composers, which was very, very popular. People will come from other faculties, from medicine, from mathematics, just to take, because it says for anyone can sign up for it. It was not compositional, it was more historical, okay? But they have access to the machinery. And it was a very popular class. And when I couldn't teach, I will do one term, the composition of electronic music, and Hambreus will do the other one. So between Hambreus, me, and Bruce Pennycook, we all did all the teaching. What else can I tell you? The first group that... When I was living in Berlin, 72-73, I became friends with the Italian composer Mario Bertoncini, and I saw the work he was doing. He was very interested in the extreme amplification of very small sounds.
Mm-hmm. He was one of the first, in fact.
Yes. So somehow, at that point, I developed a tremendous talent for using the Canada Council or the Conseil des Arts and the Quebec for programs for visiting composers, okay? And so we engaged Bertoncini. He wanted to come to North America, so he was teaching here for 2 years. And we let him do whatever he wanted for electronic music. And then from his class, Charles de Mestral, Robin Minard,
Pierre Dosti,
etc. They came to me because I was the director to see if they could create a group.
Sound.
No, it was called MUD, M-U-D, first. The same people. MUD, that was music design. M-U for music, D for design. That was the first name. But the same concept, the same people. And a year, I said yes, and they started doing concerts and whatever. And a year later, they changed it to Sound. My student, Kevin Austin, at the time, also kind of assisting me because he knew the studios. He had worked with Angel before. He knew the studios very well. He also came with the notion of having a group. And that was the beginning here of Meta Music. Now, when he left, after he graduated, he got a job at Concordia. He took his people and the idea of Meta Music to Concordia. But sometimes we invited them to come back and play concerts. So we did some of that. James came later, about 1983. During all that time, the school had a contemporary music ensemble, but the conductor was interested in going up to Stravinsky or Debussy. No Canadian music, no experimental music, no real contemporary music. And it was kind of confrontational. But I was doing my own concerts, etc. And I don't remember if I have already started the festivals. Probably not. No. So one day, beginning of September, I came to school and au pied de la Reine Victoire statue, two young fellows stopped me and say, "Oh, you are Professor Lanza. I am Klaus Schreier. I'm John Oliver. We are graduate students in composition here. We are performers and we like to play contemporary music, so we have been asking around," and the official doom said, "Contemporary music, go and talk to Alcides Lanza." So we talked and we created GEMS. Those three people, okay, Schreier, Oliver, me, we are the founders of GEMS. Who got what idea? I don't know. We went to have coffee and started talking. I insisted on, I say, we have to do it so it's going to be run by students and professors. It's not going to be for credit. It's not going to be a class, a course. It has to be independent. And because I am the king of the electronic music studio, we might as well do it within the electronic music studio because I am the boss. No one is going to question that. Unfortunately, with Peterson still being the dean and very good people around, they let me do it. The name arose for, we are looking for, we used to have meetings trying to find a proper name. What are we going to call this group? What are we going to call this group? And we were what? We were a group around the EMS. And hence, there were GEMS. We thought it was corny. We didn't like it. So we kept on looking for another better name, but we couldn't find one. So by default, remained GEMS. Mm. And we did 20 years of concerts, and usually two or three per year at Pollack Hall. And after a couple of years, I came up with the notion that we needed to do more. So I don't know if you are familiar with this. I created another cycle called Medusa.
No, I was not.
At a small concert hall, Clara Lichtenstein, mm-hmm. but it was run by GEMS. Medusa was invitational. Mm-hmm. We invited other schools around Montreal that had electronic music to come and play their concert here.
It was before the Akerik and all this person, no?
No, or probably at the same time.
At the same time, yes. Okay.
So I'm talking about from 1986 on. Medusa lasted probably 5 years. And Medusa is the initials of Musique Électroacoustique des Universités, Série Annuelle.
Oh.
Musique, en pluriel, Musique Électroacoustique des Universités, Série Annuelle, Medusa. Mm. Perfecto. So GEMS was doing all that, but when we did 20 years, and at one point things were not easy inside this faculty, internal politics. So they let us celebrate a final concert on the 20th year, and they closed the shop.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And I have to accept it. It was simultaneous with me retiring.
Mm-hmm.
And they made me director emeritus of the EMS, but now they named Sean Ferguson. So many things change inside this faculty. So.
And now, what is the direction of the studio now? And your. I know you not agree entirely with the orientation, but is there the step where was from eliminating completely the old way of working to the benefit of the numerical mm-hmm. way of working
well,
or something
that
like
that? Seems to be happening because all the analog equipment, everything that we mentioned before is in storage or it has been sold. So all the studios are run now with computers, and I think that they try to follow more or less the approach coming from IRCAM. Their interest in a multiplicity of loudspeakers, live electronics, very precise, mm-hmm. all controlled with a computer, etc. I don't want to be critical or negative or nothing. It's a different approach. It has to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I would have done the same or differently. We don't know. But I sense, and I'm not the only one, that there was a different approach taken to the whole faculty. I did not feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. So I accepted my retirement.
Mm-hmm.
Which is to say, in between the lines, you can read, I'm still not in agreement. More information with the microphone open, I cannot give you.
Okay? Yeah, it's okay.
But use your imagination.
Mm-hmm. It's not complicated.
But James did solid work. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many composers from Latin America and Europe with premiere or we perform here, the mm-hmm. solo tapes or with instruments yeah. or live electronics, many compositions from the students and other people, James, from composers from Canada. James also started the visiting composers using the SOCAN grants.
Mm-hmm.
So we got from James Tenney, okay,
mm-hmm.
Now escapes the other names. Even we got people which were more into the video art more than a strictly composition.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, when we look back, James left three different compact discs
mm-hmm.
and one LP, because it was done the first one oh. before compact discs. So it's a good record. Those are memories, and this is something tangible. It's mm-hmm. there. Okay, it's not lost. It's not ephemeral. Mm-hmm. So I think that John Oliver, Klaus Schreier, myself, and everyone else that was part of James, we can feel very, very proud of the work we did.
I think so, yeah. Also. Because it will be my next question. Is there a philosophy during the time you was teacher here? Can you talk of a school of McGill, of a school of electronic music of McGill, like we spoke about the... You know, in circuit, they use the expression l'école de Montréal, you know, because there was Francis Daumont at the University of Montreal. There was you here. And I remember because I was one of the visiting students to come to try the Saint Clavier. It was a long time, mm-hmm. eh? You didn't recognize me because I have a beer. But so there was a school of Montreal. There was Gilles Gobet, there was Claude Schreier, there was also Christian Calon, there was Robert Normando. Well,
Yves Daou himself. He started he continued the idea of the electronic studio at Le Conservatoire. Yeah. It's Michelin, Coulon, Saint-Marcoux.
Yeah, he's the only one to stay straight in the middle of what is an electroacoustic music studio.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how they work today.
He still work in this way
mm-hmm.
because he don't push away the numeric technology or all the stuff, but he learned to the student to how to compose with musical, mm-hmm. not musical but electronic instrument, every kind of electronic instrument, and he's a very good teacher. So there was a kind of what can I say. French, we said bassin de talent. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a creuset, it's something where a lot of potential was there.
Yeah, I think that McGill was the only one from 64, probably until the early 80s, and that's when the Université de Montréal started. And Michelin started a very small studio at the beginning of probably 75 or 76 at the Conservatoire. But then she passed away. So
yeah, the studio was inactive for a long time. And at mm-hmm. Laval, there was the studio of what is the name again? Marcel Deschenes worked there a little bit.
Wasn't that
Neil Parent? Yeah. So he closed the studio. Yeah, but you know, all the equipment are still there.
Mm-hmm.
that's a good point. I don't know what they will do with it, unfortunately, because they're taking a pop tendency at this university. But it is another subject. But did you consider, so there was a kind of McGill attitude who pushed the electroacoustic music in a way?
Well, yes, I think that
Because there's an opening, you have an opening mind, in fact, and you propose, you invite. I was very surprised to be accepted as a visitor, and you don't know me at all. I was not a composer, nothing at all.
No, I think that's true. I am open-minded. I also became very much aware that for a few years, McGill was the only one with really good laboratories, good equipment. So when we got requests from people that maybe they went to Pierre Schaeffer, they had been in France, they came back, they wanted to continue, there was nothing. So we accepted all. That's why Alain Thibault and Gilles Gobel, and at one point they started coming, the Francophone students, at the recommendation of Francis Daumont.
Yes, go, I remember.
Go work with Alcides, go to McGill, etc. But then, you know, University of Montreal with Francis Daumont developed very, very good studios. Now, in terms of aesthetics, I think there was always a certain clear difference.
Which is
McGill. McGill, you could do La Musique Concrète or the integration with mixed media and do things for clarinet and tape or theater. But the school, based mostly at Université de Montréal, was more centered on solo tape music, truly la musique concrète. And even if occasionally, because when the composers acquired center prestige, there were commissions, even if Normandot or Gobel or Christian Calonne, probably not. They have written for voice or on Martenot and tape, and still combination. They still, when you look at their catalog, it's the minority of works. They prefer to express themselves. And also when Francis Daumont came to teach, he also brought that impronta. Everything should be acousmatic or from the point of view of electroacoustic music only. McGill was the opposite. You could do both here. Okay, and because I was trained in New York, I was also carrying the notion that it was perfectly valid to write for three flutes and tape if you wanted to. Okay, so we never put boundaries here. So I think that it remains even today. I think
it's still
principal
like that.
Differentiation.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what Normandot is doing these days, but the going from one field to the other is still positive and still good because Normandot was lecturing here only 3 months ago. I went in the basement to the new mixed media room. He lectured there on the using 12 loudspeakers.
Yeah, the orchestra of loudspeaker developed by.
For the future, Alcides still says that you only have 2 years.
Yeah.
So I do better listening in
what
stereo.
What did you think about this idea of acousmonium developed by François Bayle, who is have a strong impact here, as you just mentioned, because, 12 speaker and we use the sound in the space and all this stuff, and you said, yes, but we have 2 years. So
well, I think that is. I see it as kind of experimental. It has to be done because we learn a lot on how to listen by doing that. But it's very expensive. I think that the majority of people don't have those multiple loudspeakers settings at home. So, and I think it's a little bit artificial because truly humans have 2 ears, okay? Even in watching television, now my daughter is getting married and her boyfriend has these towers of loudspeakers on the side, in front, in the back. If I am looking at Ingrid Bergman, I don't want her voice to come from back here. It bothers me.
Okay? Because the eye will interfere.
Maybe I'm too old. I'm inflexible. I'm too old. I don't want to do it. But I respect the need to do it. Someone else had to do it. In terms of who originated that, I don't know. But I tell you this.
Because the sound and all this person create something like that in a way, no?
Yes, but I'm not thinking about that. When I was a student under the guidance of Vladimir Yuzechevsky in New York City at Columbia, I mentioned I was assigned to the Studio 106. That's where Varese used to work. So he has this, some little history there. Berio worked there. Just 20 meters from it, there was the Macmillan Theater. And all the concerts of electronic music and new music took place at that time at the Macmillan Theater. So the first day I was there, I noticed that there was this built in the house huge mixing console, permanently installed in the middle of the hall. And on the ceiling, there were like 24 loudspeakers, all in the ceiling. Like this.
And we are in the 50s.
We are in 1965. It was already not operational, like the Hewlett-Packard machinery. I remember talking with Mario Davidovsky and with Mima Roglu about that. He said, no, there were too many problems, and we tried to fix them. So now when they have electronic music, they put two or four loudspeakers on the stage. So they must have built that around 1958. But the idea was that total surround sound. So, I don't know, Francois Bell, the people at Columbia, it doesn't matter. But speaking coldly, I see it as a very expensive proposition that the majority of people who are buying the recordings of electronic music or tuning to the programs on the radio will not have at home. I'm driving, this is also for the future. I'm the only senior composer that goes to the Concordia, multiple concerts organized by Kevin Austin and his confreres. And I have done that through the years repeatedly. But I notice I'm the only, not only, only senior composer, the only composer outside Concordia that goes there. And I don't like it too much. I think that other people should make the effort and go. But in any case, now they are into this new theory of the multiple loudspeaker, total surround sound, acousmonium, etc. So Kevin goes to the microphone, he talks a lot, and always explains the type of technology applied to that listening situation. The hall, the Oscar Peterson Concert Hall, is rather big, and they don't have a large audience. So he always recommends sit in front of the mixing console towards the center. That's the best listening spot, okay? Yeah, in the middle. And more than once, he has seen me sitting here. Sometimes we did on the microphone. I went last week with it just personally because he forgot that I always sit there and say, I was your teacher. Don't you remember? I was always contrary. I was always off center. I'm still have 2 years. What you are describing is for one person, ideal listening spot. For one person, it's so expensive. Not fair. I hear pretty well there. I like to be off center.
Did you consider also there will be, there's a kind of Canadian school of electroacoustic or a Canadian?
I think there is one, definitely. Yes. It has, like Medusa. Medusa with multiple heads in mythology? Okay.
So
because I think in Vancouver, with Barry Truax and Martin Gottfried, who was also part of the McGill Groups and Meta Music. He was also my student. But particularly Barry Truax, he has developed serious important software for granular synthesis, and he has composed quite a bit, so he's an accepted composer internationally. I think that there is a school there. Toronto was doing very well in the late 50s and 60s, but on the last 20, 30 years,
there was nothing.
Nothing. I don't know. I don't know if Yamaga is still in charge of the electronic studio or not. I really don't know. But I don't hear names truly devoted. The Torontonians or people who now live in Toronto that emerge into the field, usually they do not come from the universities in Toronto. They come from poetry, doing sound poetry, or from radio. There are other interests, and there are important people there. But I don't see the the principal one or two schools, but I don't know much. Maybe I'm wrong on that. Maybe it's just my ignorance.
And Quebec is the same. We don't. All the composers come in Montreal, generally mm-hmm. speaking, except for the Avatar group. Maybe did you heard about it? It's a group of audio art, audio made by artists. In fact, mm-hmm. they use all these hacking techniques where you put a whole synthesizer and begin to play in it and just hacking it by. Use, for example, photoresistor or instead of a... Well, there's something there, but at the same time, it's very primitive. So, so for you, there's mm-hmm. a couple of head, aesthetically speaking, in mm-hmm. Canada.
Yeah. I don't know how much comes from Kingston. I know that Christy Alec used to direct. Now there is a new name as director of the studio. She's still there. Mm-hmm. But I don't see that they are forming too many... good graduate students devoting themselves to electroacoustic, okay. that they are having some significance. I don't see that. And Ottawa, the same. Mm-hmm. So it's.
I will maybe ask you two last questions. In fact, it's quite... I don't know. For the first one, I don't know if you will be comfortable with it. But if not, you just said, no, I have nothing to say about that. It's the role of the CAC to create a sense of community. Did you feel that? And are you comfortable with this, not the CAC, but the idea of a community of electroacoustic?
Yes, and I supported when it was created. I was very much in favor. I think that at the beginning, I might be wrong on this, but I think at the beginning it was better integrated with composers from the two or three schools or universities in Montreal. But somehow it was settled around Concordia. But now I noted the absence of my colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks to the new technologies and the internet, internationally is different because I am part of the CEC conference, so I see all these other sometimes important names, Larry Austin, and people from England who seem to be participating. I have a limitation. I don't like, I'm still considering if I will ask Jeff Chippewa to take my name off the list. I'm getting tired of hitting delete, 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 and not reading messages, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Particularly in the last few weeks where the Electronic Music Foundation in Albany is also having like a conference, and I'm beginning to get multiple messages which I'm not interested in reading. So I don't know, it seems to be different people with different needs to express themselves, and someone asks one question and then everyone has to respond. I'm not that way.
You're not agreeing.
I prefer the one-to-one.
Yeah, okay.
But I don't know if that's the answer. I don't know. It's important, but I think the original intention might have been different.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
It's changed also with the time, yeah. and very fast. At the beginning, it was very... concentrate in Montreal and all the mm-hmm. the era of Canada in general, but that's all. And now it's, as you said, sometimes it's begin to be an overflow of email and we don't know why.
But actually, Kevin Austin never responded to one day because you never see me writing too frequently.
No.
Are you a member? Yes.
Yes, so. I answer one time.
Okay, so me it's rare, but one day and say, Kevin, how is your... carpal syndrome. Is anything happening? He never answered that. But the thing, because I have had problems with the computer, I have even surgery, that I see so many answers from Kevin Austin. He must spend 8 hours per day just typing answers. Like he had to be opinionated about everything. But he never took the hint why I was asking about his carpal tunnel. Actually, I think he's here.
That's a good question, in fact.
Yeah.
My last question will be very simple. You have a couple of work in the CAC bank of tape, as you know, maybe. That is the work. The listing of the works I found. Did you have the...
I didn't write the last one.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you didn't write the last one.
The last one is not mine.
Oh, no, that's right. can you commentate one of this piece, one of your choice? Can you give us some track about his composition or the way to listening to it or something like, if you agree, and if you feel comfortable with the idea?
Let me go quickly through everything, mm-hmm. and if there is a need to stay longer with one, we stay longer. In the interview with it yesterday, I mentioned Penetrations 1. That's the one I wrote for Charles Wuorennin and Harvey Solver, and they never said thank you. Okay. Exercise 1, we also, I spoke extensively yesterday, that being probably my first solo tape piece, and it starts with the sound when I kick the EMT echo chamber. Ekphonesis 4 was commissioned at McGill. Plectros 3 and Eidesis 3, I mentioned that I had used the Lekain instruments on those both pieces. Penetration 7 was today the center part of the trilogy, but it was the first one to be written. And right there, yesterday I said that I gave that kind of jazzy improvisation to the singer. Then she switches to speaking out of a dictionary definition of the word eidesis. Okay? And at the end of that statement, probably 20 words, the phrase ends with the word memory. So my graphic writing says that the singer has to say memory without repeats, but lasting 14 seconds. So it results on something like this. Memories. And we spoke about that composition yesterday, but today we are talking about memories. It occurred to me, but I don't see it here, many years later, I got a commission to write for the McGill Concert Choir and computer tape. And looking for ideas, one day I jump into this, I went to the recording from the Donaueschingen Festival of Penetrations, the jazzy piece and the woman child. And I say, well, I'm going to take that recording of the word memory only. And I will analyze it. We didn't have PIC at that time. I don't know, maybe I did it just with my imagination, but I say the way she went from the low, more, higher, etc., I will take that shape. I will, in fact, I will multiply the 14 seconds by 10 in a very loose way and make it 14 minutes. And I will use the shape of that memories as the shape for the whole composition. And I will write a composition for choir without text, which it didn't happen. At the end, I think I settle on only the word memory. And I take 17 minutes, and the choirs, the only thing they have is the syllables and letters of the word memory. The composition is called Censors 4. Mm-hmm. Hypnos 1, Ekphonesis 5 is the now first part of the trilogy, but as you can see, was written like 7 years after the first part, and that's the one when I say the a singer in miniature could enter my brain and would find like a forgotten bibliothèque there, library. Actually, the composition many times uses words like library, books, bibliothèques with different spellings, not only in French, okay, with K at the end. Biblos. Okay. I look for many things related with books and libraries in Ekphonesis 5. But truly, Ekphonesis 5 is my autobiography part 1. It's about my childhood the memories of my childhood. And so I talk about my grandmother. During the first 6 minutes in the dark with the flashlight, the singer has only the vowels of the word abuela, grandmother, in Spanish. A-U-E-A. And she, well, you get to see the score or hear the composition. Modulus 2 is for guitar, I said nothing. Interference 3 is very interesting because it was commissioned by a group in Argentina. And it was adopted by the group Gems, and the group Gems has played, and many people, and many ensembles. It's very, very flexible, kind of homage to Cage. And now if you go to the McGill EMS archival on the internet, the only thing you have to do is to put a search for Coltrane, like John Coltrane. Just put Coltrane and you can enter to the EMS archival. And the drawing you see there is a drawing of the score of Interferences 3. Interferences was conceived a little bit a la John Cage, who has done compositions on transparent paper, separate pages, and then he puts them one. I did all that the same on my brain. That's what I did for that piece. So the people who did the cover page for the desktop for the Coltrane EMS archival took that composition from the LP done by Gems 20 years before and superposed it with a slight shift. And it became a very interesting design.
I suppose,
excuse me, Organum 4, I don't remember.
Okay.
Ekphonesis 6 is la troisième partie de la trilogie, and hence is like an ABA. If the A was Ekphonesis 5, my autobiography, part 1, and the B was the child woman, etc., and the memories of the humankind, the A prime at the end, I say, I go back to my life in Canada. So it's my autobiography and my three children's voices and playing the piano and just bouncing around are heard in that composition. There is a big change there. I have always written my own text. It's a long story, but starts with the detail and ginastera that I never felt comfortable with a text that was written by someone else before the music was started. Why? Because it has form, it has harmony, poetry already done by someone else and not me. So I always chose to write my own text. But Meg Shepard, when I was ready for the third part of the trilogy, finally after 10 years, she said, basta, enough is enough. And she said, Alcides, you don't know how to deal with poetry. You are always listen to it silently, but you have to hear it. Someone has to acted for you. So she chose text by Norbert Rouepsat. He's a Canadian poet who at the time was married to Hildegard Westerkamp.
Yes.
Okay. She also chose poems by W.B. Yeats.
Yes.
And Robert Frost, and proceeded to recite all that. So finally, the first time since I was very, very young, that I use poetry by someone else. And that's the closing part of the trilogy. Then it says La Trilogie. And the last one, Organum 5, highly recommended. Probably is the version for piano, but that was written for Joseph Petrick, accordion and electroacoustic sounds. And it involves a little bit of tango here and there. But because I had to practice at one point to demonstrate for Petrick, I realized that it was in itself, for if you forget the registration, a piano piece. So I started playing, but it's published by my own company, Chelan, as Organum 5 PET, P-E-T, short for Petrick, or Organum 5 letter Pi in Greek, P-I, short for piano.
For piano.
End of the story.
Mm.
Thank you very much. Merci beaucoup.
Oh. Thank you very much. You precede me a little bit, but it's very good. Thank you very much. I said, Islanda. It was a pleasure, okay. Really.
We shall do more.